Now, while we've got our election out of the way here in the US, it's still 3 weeks away, and Americans have a pretty big decision to make about what sort of president they want to lead them. Harvard University Professor Joseph Nye has served alongside presidential candidates in the past in the State Department in Washington, and in his recent book, Do Morals Matter, he rates presidents from FDR through to Donald Trump on their foreign policy. Now, spoiler alert, Donald Trump doesn't get an especially high mark, and as you might expect, as he's pulled the plug on things like global climate agreements, the WHO, WTO and TPP and more. But he's also taken on another tough task, and that's pondering just how the current COVID crisis in 2020 might alter our global geopolitics in 2030. And he boiled it down to five possible scenarios.
What I argue is that nobody knows exactly what will happen in, let's say, 2030 as a result of COVID. And one has to realize that there isn't one future. There are many possible futures. And so one possible future is that you'll have a collapse of this liberal international order. It had already been somewhat under threat from two things. One was the rise of China, and the other was the lack of support from the administration of Donald Trump. I think the COVID made some of that worse in the sense that Trump withdrew from the World Health Organization, and you do see pressures on the system from that. If Biden is elected, I suspect that that's not the future. I think Biden will rejoin the WHO, will actually make an effort to rejoin the Paris Climate Accords. So I think there's likely to be an effort to reconstruct the liberal international order if the presidency changes. On the other hand, if Trump is reelected, then I think that scenario of decline of the international order is quite plausible.
Well, the second scenario is one that I think people have talked about a lot as a possibility, a kind of return of the 1930s and with disruption of the global economy with the pandemic, creating possible conditions for authoritarian politics. And again, yes, people looking back to what happened in Germany, late 20s, early 30s, people looking for scapegoats, economic protectionism, and, you know, authoritarian states trying to create spheres of interest and hold on to those. Do you think that is likely to become a real trend in the next 10 years?
I think there's about a 10% chance of that. I don't think it has a high probability. It can't be ruled out. But I think, again, whether it gets a higher probability than that will depend upon whether we manage to get this pandemic under control. Because until we get the pandemic under control, we're not going to get the world economy back to full-blown growth. And we do know from the example of the 30s that terrible domestic economic conditions can support authoritarian movements in a number of countries. So I think we probably will get the pandemic under control, and that after a few years, the world economy will be back in a growth mode. But again, as I said, we can't be 100% sure of it. So I give that a 1 in 10 chance.
Well, a third scenario, a China-dominated or driven world order. So China perhaps mastering the pandemic quicker than other countries. And as we know, its economy has been growing in recent years, and the possibility of it surpassing that of a declining United States economy, that would lead to a big international shift. And all the while, of course, China, with its diplomatic and economic intertwined initiatives, things like the Belt and Road Initiative, so creating kind of economic partners, and the balance of those relationships may be shifting as it invests all over Latin America, Europe, South Pacific, everywhere with these economic projects. Is that going to be something that really determines world geopolitics come 2030?
Well, again, China was already growing in an impressive way. And many economists thought that with China's growth rates in the range of 6% and the American growth rates in the range of 2.5%, that China might have a bigger economy measured in exchange rates by, let's say, the early 2030s. With the past year, China looks like we'll have about 2.5% growth rate. positive, and it looks like the American growth rate will be minus 4% on the negative side. That might advance that time when China overtakes the U.S. as the world's largest economy by a year or two. But the question of whether it will be the most powerful country in the world or not depends on also what happens in terms of Chinese military power and soft power. And those are both areas where the Americans have assets that are well out of reach of China at this point. But if the Americans mishandle their cards badly, and if China keeps playing its game better, then that could speed that up. So again, I think it's not one a scenario that can be ruled out. I don't expect it by 2030, which is the sort of the cutoff date that I was using for my my different scenarios.
With our understanding of China, though, is this a real problem in the rest of the world that we don't necessarily understand China very well? I mean, it's maybe a silly comparison, but one thing that always startled me was something I found out recently was that China had never won any Olympic medals until the Games of 1984 in Los Angeles. They simply weren't a sporting force until then. Now, of course, when the Olympic Games are held, they're right up there at the very top of the medals table. But around the world, very few people outside the region could name major, say, Chinese cultural figures in the same way that they could for, you know, other countries. Is it just something that over the next 10 years that to understand China better, these things will have to change in the rest of the world?
Oh, I think we definitely will have to get to know China better and understand it better, because it's becoming a major factor. If you have the world's second largest economy, and you also have a very assertive government, which is insisting on harnessing that economy to the goals of the Chinese Communist Party, you can't ignore China. The American National Basketball Association found that out when one of its officials made a comment about Taiwan that China didn't like, and China decided, well, you're going to be shut out of the television market for basketball in China. Well, that had a very powerful effect. Just recently, Korean boys pop band KTS did singers made a comment saying that about the Korean War in 1950, and China was offended by that, and they threatened to ban, or at least the blogosphere in China threatened to ban this singer. The point is, China is going to be big. And we are going to have to learn it to understand it. But we also have to learn that while China can use that size for bullying, we're going to have to know when we stand up to it and when we say, well, that's the way things are. So I think we have a lot more to learn about China.
Another 2030 scenario you paint as a possible is with public opinion, and particularly in democratic countries, placing a higher priority on things like climate change, environmental conservation, and some governments and companies already reorganizing themselves to deal with these issues, that post-COVID there could be an amplification of this and an acceleration of it. And I mean, the possibility, perhaps you mentioned earlier, the Marshall Plan post-World War II to reconstruct Germany and the positive impact that had down the line, very far-sighted thing. Is that something you think is likely over the next 10 years, that we could have a kind of post-COVID global Marshall Plan type of thinking?
Well, I'd like to believe it. Certainly if Trump's reelected, that probability of that scenario goes way down, because that's not his style, not his interest. If Biden is elected, you could imagine Biden joining the World Health Organization's COVAX fund or facility for making sure that there's a distribution of vaccines to poor countries. I'd like to see him go further and get other countries to join with the U.S. in a Marshall Plan for poor countries with inadequate public health systems. It makes no sense to have a virus which is defeated in the northern hemisphere and has reservoirs in the southern hemisphere in poor countries, which then overflow back into the northern hemisphere. So it's in our self-interest as well as humanitarian interest to do something like a Marshall Plan for poor countries in dealing with COVID. I think Biden would understand that. I don't think Trump would. I don't think there's a high probability of that, but I think that I'd say maybe, you know, if we're playing with these numbers again, 2 out of 5, something like that.
And the final scenario that you say is a possibility, I think it's been labelled more of the same. So perhaps COVID will actually have fairly limited long-term geopolitical effects. We will see countries weakened by the economic damage of it, but gradually recovering. So perhaps some cooperation and friendship, but rivalries being managed between them, some international institutions withering, others getting repaired, the US possibly still being the biggest, most influential power in the world, but without the same level of influence. Do you think this is perhaps more likely than all the other scenarios, that things just reconstitute themselves a bit much as they are now, but everybody takes a bit of a hit?
I think that's the most likely outcome. Sometimes people say, well, you know, given the magnitude of COVID and the number of people killed and the devastation it's wreaked, not so much in New Zealand, but in other parts of the world, you know, we're bound to have major long-term effects on geopolitics. But you know what? If you look back to the 1918 great influenza pandemic, what we find is that while it killed many more people than World War I killed, and many more than we've seen killed by COVID today, it didn't have large geopolitical effects. The big changes of the 1930s, the rise of communism and fascism and so forth, were more the product of World War I than they were of the great influenza. So we have to realize that while we're tempted to think that big causes always have big effects, and COVID certainly is a big cause, it's not clear it's going to have big international effects. It may have more effects on social attitudes, how we travel, how we learn, the role of virtual versus physical connections and so forth. I think there will be effects of COVID on that. But on reversing the international order, the geopolitical order, I suspect that the scenario of more of the same is has the highest probability of the 5 that I described.
And just in terms of where we are in New Zealand, there used to be this phrase that we live in a what they call a benign strategic environment. Some people believe it, some people don't. But here we are down in the South Pacific, no major threats on our doorstep. And I mean, for decades now, we've become used to a kind of Pax Americana, if you like, the security being kind of guaranteed by the fact that, you know, further up the Pacific, American military power is dominant, and its allies as well. Do you think we can count on that over the next 10 years, that we still will live in a benign strategic environment, or do we perhaps need to think of threats on our horizon?
Well, there are all many different types of threats. I think in terms of military threats, I suspect the American alliance with Japan is going to last. I think that helps to balance the expansion of Chinese power. The Japanese and the Americans are working with the Australians and the Indians in what's called the Quad, of trying to keep a shape the environment of the Pacific and the Indian Ocean so that China doesn't become a bully. And New Zealand benefits from that. So New Zealand should look benignly at that. But there are going to be questions that you'll have to ask. What happens to some of the Pacific islands when China basically uses its economic strength to buy them off, to make them little satrapies and so forth? How are you going to deal with Chinese efforts to pour money into your politics or to prevent you from making critical comments, let's say, about human rights in Xinjiang or Hong Kong and so forth? So I don't think New Zealand has to worry about the threat of a Chinese invasion. I do think New Zealand is going to have to work closely with other Western democracies in terms of making sure, not that we have a cold war with China or isolate China, heaven forbid, but that we make sure that China realizes that it can't just throw its weight around, but there will be coordinated responses.
Well, finally, Joseph, if I relieve you of the burden of trying to predict world geopolitics in 10 years' time and get you to think of maybe just 3 weeks into the future, we've just come through our election campaign here, one that people probably wish was over a bit sooner than it actually was, but it was delayed by COVID. Of course, with COVID still ravaging the country, you've got your poll going on, and then November the 3rd, the big day. What do you think will happen then?
Well, predicting American elections can be a fool's game. After all, in 2016, all the polls showed that Hillary Clinton was ahead of Trump, and yet he won. Of course, he didn't win the popular vote. He won the Electoral College vote, so he had he was a minority president in that sense. Right now, though, the polls show a much bigger lead of Biden over Trump than Clinton had over Trump in 2016. And if that lead holds, let's say Biden being up by 5% or 6% or so in the polls that have been reported this week, and including on some of the key states that he lost in 2016, like Michigan and Pennsylvania and Wisconsin, he now is in the lead in those states. So at this stage, I think the smart money is on a change and a Biden victory. But as I said, you never know. Politics is not clear until the votes have been cast and counted. And we still have quite a ways to go on that.
But if it came to the moral element of presidential foreign policy, which is the subject of your book there, pretty fair to say it's clear that that would be more likely coming from one presidential candidate than the other.
Oh, absolutely. I think this election is tremendously important, not just for the United States in terms of having a moral foreign policy, but also for its effects on the rest of the world. As one of my European friends put it to me, he said, "We've held our breath for 4 years, but it's very hard to hold our breath for 8 years."
Yes, indeed. Well, thanks so much for joining us on Sunday morning here on RNZ National. It's Joseph S. Nye from Harvard University. Thanks so much.
I enjoyed it, and all my best to New Zealand.